show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. We are back with you here. We talked a lot about, of course, the big Alex Gordon news last week, and now it's going to be all about moving forward as we move further into 2016 and more towards spring training. But first, I am your host, Jeff Herr, and with me is the quixotic Michael Engel. I'm trying to throw some new ones in.
That
there.
Is a new
you know,
one.
There's got to be, you know, you're someone such as yourself cannot be held to just a few of the standards. So trying to branch out. But Mike, on this evening, how are you doing?
I'm not too bad. I would like it if my alma mater would play basketball better tonight, but
yes,
Kate. I can't really complain because they're number one, and it would be silly to complain. But they're not playing like they're number one. No. If that's the worst thing that happens to me this week, well, that's okay.
So be it.
I'll live with
it. the Kansas City Royals are still World Series champions. You can always fall back on that.
Yep.
For the next year, at least, and much longer to quiet you on those rough nights, you
know, right?
That we all seem to have. You can always remind yourself the Royals are World Series champions.
The warm glow of the DVD player and the 5-game set on DVD.
Yes, exactly.
That I got for Christmas.
And speaking of which, the defense of that title has already started. As we mentioned last week, and we talked rather in depth on the show about Alex Gordon and how the Royals signed him, and you kind of, in terms of position players, they were probably done. Now, the only thing is there was a lot of talk about who the Royals are going to get in pitching. They still kind of had a need for a pitcher in the starting rotation, specifically to start the year. So the question, and obviously, that everyone wants to know, who's it going to be? There's a lot of guys out there. Mike, I know you've taken a real hard look at the list. Tell me and everyone here what you saw when you looked at the list. Who are the guys that people should be paying attention to, and who, you know, just kind of go into a little bit. We can kind of discuss. We have some ones that we want to hit on, but give the broad list and some of the ones that probably people should maybe look into if they're curious.
Well, the number one guy, and I'm not, this is just teasing the number one guy, but the guy that I wanted, and we were talking before the show, you wanted him too, was Wei-Yin Chen. But he signed with the Marlins this morning. So that's gone. If the Royals want him, they're going to have to wait until July of 2017 when the Marlins are inevitably selling guys off again.
Course.
But I mean, just to set it up first, I mean, we're looking at the Royals starting rotation. They're going to start with, right now, it's got to be Volquez, Ventura, Duffy, Medlin, and Chris Young. And so when you're looking at that group, Medlin coming off his second Tommy John, Ventura was kind of inconsistent last year. I think they're comfortable with him. There's no question he's going to be in the rotation. Chris Young kind of hits a wall at 120 innings. Danny Duffy has never been a 200 inning guy and probably will never be a 200 inning guy. So they're going to need another starter. And it kind of came out shortly after the Royals signed Gordon that they were still looking at a pitcher. And one of the first names that popped up was Ian Kennedy, former Yankee, Padre, you know, good strikeout guy. So that's one name. And another name, Giovanni Gallardo, the Royals have kind of been interested in him as well. Former Brewer, former Ranger. So those are probably, like, if I had to put them into tiers, that's tier one. unfortunately, both of those guys have a qualifying offer set up. So if the Royals were to sign one of them, they would lose their first round draft pick. So that's kind of where those guys are. Then second tier, and these guys are maybe more of your reclamation projects, but not like deep reclamations. They're good houses in a good neighborhood that just need a little attention. You know, they're not complete fixer-uppers.
It's not a tear down, but there's some reno required.
Right. You can probably, you know, just update some appliances and maybe some tiling and whatever, and you're probably okay. So those are guys like, you know, Matt Latos, Doug Pfister. Cliff Lee is saying if he gets the right fit, he'd like to come and pitch in 2016. He missed all of last year. So that's kind of your second group, you know, and then you kind of get into the third group. And these are guys that, who knows, you know, injuries or age or just other things have gotten in the way. There's still upside left, though. And so the guys that I looked at were like Mark Burley, Mike Minor, former Brave, Kyle Loesch, Tim Lincecum. Don't know how I can't say that word. Justin Masterson. And I also jotted down Alfredo Simon, but I'm going to scratch him off because I don't want any part of that guy. But that is another name.
Consider him scratched.
You might be interested in him. I don't know. But those are kind of the guys that I could see the Royals maybe going after for maybe 1 year deals or something like that. So that's kind of the breakdown as I see it. I think probably most likely are those guys in tier one are the guys that the Royals are really looking at, you know, in Ian Kennedy and Giovanni Gallardo. They both have decent track records. They both have some question marks. So I'm not sure, you know, what the Royals' preference is, but it seems to be that they've been in on Gallardo for more of the offseason. So I don't know, but I would definitely prefer Kennedy from among those two. And so for this first segment, those are the two that we're really going to focus on primarily, because I think you've probably got a better chance of those two than the rest of the field. So I don't know what your thoughts are between those two of your preference. I imagine it. I think I have a feeling, but I'm not completely sure which one.
If I had to pick between the two, I'd probably go with Ian Kennedy personally. I just think he's got a little bit more of the upside. I think, you know, you look at and Dave Lesky, friend of the show on Twitter has mentioned a lot of, we'll call it less than favorable opinions about Giovanni Gallardo.
That's and a way to put it.
I don't know that Gallardo would be as bad as he kind of seems to think. I don't know if I'm that far, but I do see a lot of his points. He's hitting that bad part of the aging curve. All his stats are pointing in a bad direction. Not even specifically just standard surface level ones, but the deeper metrics as well. So you got to wonder about that. Now, the wild card in all this is Dave Island, Kauffman Stadium. So We've had a couple situations in the past few years since Island has become the pitching coach. You look at Jeremy Guthrie, who, you know, struggled at the end of his career, but he was, what, 35 last year? So, I mean, it's just kind of his time was done. That's just kind of it. So it's not necessarily a failure on Island or whoever. The game had just passed him by, and that happens to everyone at some point. But when Guthrie came over in 2012 and then how he pitched in 2013 and even 2014 to a lesser extent, you know, he was still a pretty valuable pitcher. Gave you a lot of innings. You knew what you were going to get from him. He had the occasional just horrible outing, but you could put up with that every one in, you know, five times like it was in those years. But then when it started to get to last year and it was one every two or three times, that's when you all of a sudden it was harder to stomach. But and then you look at what Edinson Volquez has been able to accomplish under last year under Dave Island. And, you know, I mean, James Shields he's been good at his whole career, but, you know, it He didn't get worse when he came here and all these things. So you look at that and you say, okay, someone like Gallardo, even though they're kind of pointing down and their metrics don't necessarily say, hey, he's going to be good here. It depends on how much you can put that trust in Dave Allen. And I think they have a really good way system for scouting those types of pitchers where, you know, I think some depending on the organization, you might have a GM who just says, hey, I like this guy. He's got something that I like about him as a pitcher. I feel like, and I don't have any firsthand evidence or whatever to back this up, but I feel like there's a good communication structure between a Dave Allen and a Dayton Moore to where they say, okay, here's a pitcher we want. You know, here are the ones we're thinking about. Is there something that you see that you can work with that you can allow this pitcher to have more success? And, you know, to this point, it's worked. So that's why Ian Kennedy seems to be more intriguing to me, because his just, you know, recent history, he seems to be a little bit better. I'm pulling up his stats here because I have he had 200 strikeouts in, was it 2014? I just want to get the year right. 2014. So he had, you know, 201 innings and 207 strikeouts in 2014 for San Diego. So, you know, that and last year, you know, he struggled a little bit comparatively. But, you know, when you have that kind of a year, and San Diego's got a pretty pitcher-friendly park as well. So If Island sees something in him, then I would trust that he can find something, you know, that he can exploit to the Royals' advantage with their park and that defense and something like that. I think, you know, you're looking at kind of the, I like to call pitching in front of the Royals' defense and in Kauffman Stadium, the kind of anti or reverse National League to American League or I guess the. Okay, let me start over. When you switch from the American, you know, when a pitcher switches from the American League to the National League, they get that little bit of a bump because one out of every nine batters they face is a pitcher the majority of the time, not every time.
Because and the NL is generally a lower scoring league because of that.
Right. Yeah. So you get that small bump, but with going from National League to the American League, it's in the reverse, but playing in front of the Royals defense with Kauffman Stadium, that basically negates that change from no DH to the DH. So that's a positive. And when you look at where you can go, Kennedy's got those kind of, he's got that kind of Royals feel to him. He's got that, His solid whip numbers of 1.276 for his career, 97 ERA plus, he's right about average for his career. And that's for me, that's who I would go with personally. But, you know, at this point, it's one of those things where, as you talked about, with Chen being gone as kind of the number one guy, we're in a position where whoever it's going to be, you're going to have to kind of talk yourself into a little bit, unfortunately. Yeah. And maybe all of this stems from the fact that I would probably have the easiest time talking myself into Ian Kennedy.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, for me, what I'm looking at are things like with Gallardo, you look over the last couple of years, his strikeout rate has plummeted. In 2012, he struck out 23.7 percent of the batters that he faced. It's progressively gone down. It was 18.6 in 2013, 17.9 in 2014, and last year's 15.3. It's not like there's been a significant change in some other level. You know, his fly ball percentage hasn't changed much. His line drive percentage hasn't really changed much. His ground ball hasn't changed much. And it's not like he's walking fewer people. So he's just striking out fewer. The velocity is down just a bit. So those are the big warning signs that, Leski in particular is kind of seeing. And I think that's significant to worry about. I think that's especially if you're going to be giving up, you know, like MLB trade rumors projected 4 years and $52 million for Gallardo. You know, if you're going to invest that, probably wouldn't have to do that deal. Probably get by with, 3 and maybe even 2 years, but you're still giving up a draft pick and you're still going to have to invest probably $12 to $14 million a year. And so if you're doing that with a guy whose strikeout rate just keeps falling, you know, he's only 29, you know, he's going to be 30 when the season starts. That's where I think a lot of the red flags are really popping up for people. You compare him to Ian Kennedy. Kennedy's a little older, but he's starting in a much better spot. You know, their walk rates are about the same over the course of their career. It's 7.6 to 7.5. That's negligible. I mean, it's basically the same. But with Kennedy, his strikeout rate is just keeping on. It just keeps increasing. You know, it's 20.8%. You know, in 2012, and he finished last year at 24.4. So he's starting where, you know, like you quoted his strikeouts over the number of innings. You know, he's doing more than a strikeout an inning, which is really nice. You know, that's always a great standard to have for a pitcher. And if you can get a guy who can throw close to 200 innings at that kind of rate, that's something the Royals generally don't have. They generally don't have a big strikeout pitcher. And I think that bodes well for Kennedy. Plus, that's, you know, fewer balls in play, which for the Royals, generally, yeah, you're fine with them getting balls in play, but they're also going to make more of the plays. And so you're just basically like cornering the market. You're like, he's going to strike out or he's going to hit it into this fantastic defense. And for Kennedy, compared to Gallardo, Kennedy's more of a fly ball pitcher. You know, about 40% of the time guys hit a fly ball. For Gallardo, it's about 30%. And a lot of times you may not want that guy to be a fly ball pitcher. You know, one of the things that I usually like is a high strikeout, low walk, and high ground ball rate. But for the Royals, where you've got Gordon, Kane, probably Dyson, if nothing changes in your outfield, I'm okay with some fly balls. I'll let those guys chase.
And them. A bigger park.
And a bigger park. Though he was in San Diego, so for Kennedy. So, you know, that's a pretty decent park for a fly ball pitcher, too. But you combine that, you know, great defense behind him, good infield defense, great outfield defense, and high strikeouts. And that's where he kind of jumps ahead of Gallardo and to where I'd feel comfortable with giving up a draft pick and, you know, 3-year, $39 million kind of deal. So Kennedy gets the nod for me. But I'm the same way. I'm not as low on Gallardo as Lesky is, but I'm not sure anybody could be lower than Lesky in that regard. So, you know, there are some decent things. Like most of his, you know, left on base is pretty stable. You know, the average against is generally pretty stable. There's not really a real big scary home run kind of thing. So I don't know. I mean, I would have to do a lot more convincing for Gallardo. I would probably not be thrilled if they signed him, especially if they signed him before Kennedy signed. But I think I'd get over it fairly quickly. And it could go back to what you said about Dave Island. If they identify something that maybe mechanically he's doing differently that has led to, you know, some of these changes, well, that might be something. That might be part of what the problem is. If they get that corrected, well, then, you know, maybe you found a diamond in the rough who, you know, can regain some of the form that made him one of the top young pitchers just, you know, 3-4 years ago. So I'd be willing to kind of see what they do. You know, Volquez, Vargas, they have a good track record with some of these guys who don't seem like big names, but manage to do something. So I definitely do prefer Kennedy, though. But if it's Gallardo, I'll live with it.
Yeah, and for comparison's sake, Volquez, the 2 years before he came to Kansas City, he had in 363 innings pitched, he had a 4.29 ERA, a 4.19 FIP, and an 82 ERA plus.
A lot of walks.
With, yeah, 3.7 walks per nine with only 7 strikeouts per 9 innings. Ian Kennedy... and by the way, both the same age, or yeah, because they were both
Kennedy and Volquez.
Yeah, well, I guess let me rephrase that. Kennedy is the same age now as Volquez was last season when the Royals signed him.
Gotcha.
So going into or already turned 30. Now, in 369 innings pitched for Kennedy, he had a 3.92 ERA with a 3.8 FIP and an 89 ERA plus. So, you know, 89 ERA plus, nothing to write home about necessarily, but just to kind of put it into perspective that, you know, someone like Volquez can have had, you know, clearly worse stats and was still able to, you know, find something with, whether it was Dave Island or whether it was the defense or the park or whatever the case may be, you know, something that worked here in Kansas City. So again, you can kind of squint a little bit and convince yourself, hey, maybe Kennedy can find something similar, or even Gallardo could.
Another thing on Kennedy that I just kind of glanced at is that last year he gave up a lot of home runs last year. I don't know why. It seems kind of weird for him to give up a lot of home runs when he pitches half the time in San Diego, but like 17.2% of the fly balls hit against him went for home runs, which is very high. I mean, it's generally like 10% of the time that happens. So if that regresses to normal, and you would think, given another full season, another big park, he'd probably outperform a lot of, you know, the ERA that he had last year. It's 4.28 ERA last year. The xFIP on Fangraphs is 3.7, which is perfectly acceptable for number two, number three kind of guy. And if there's any bit of like bump from the Royals defense, because the Padres defense is not good.
No.
Will Myers is playing center field for you for part of
you're in some trouble.
That's not good.
People were saying he was going to be a liability at right field. So
yeah. Now he's playing first base. So that's how it's.
Oh, Will Myers.
I still like Will Myers, but
yeah, he's not, I would still there. Love him on this team, but you know.
Yeah. Anyway,
of a World Series. Anyway.
So if that's another bump that Kennedy would get, then you know he might be a potential 3.4 kind of ERA guy, with the Royals behind him. And you know, if you can get that for a somewhat minimal investment, you know, you got guys going for $30 million, and even Chen is getting 5 years, which, you know, he's probably worth it. But it's, you know, anything over like 3 years for a pitcher gets a little scary just because they're pitchers, and that's what it is. And so if you're only investing, you know, $12, $13, $14 million a year on a guy who can be a number two starter on most teams or a lot of teams, That's pretty good investment. That's a pretty good Royals investment. That's just kind of the way they've tried to do things lately. And I think Kennedy's got the most likelihood of doing something like that. So I hope their interest in him is greater than Gallardo. I guess I could talk myself into Gallardo, but I'd have to probably sit and think about it a long time.
And this goes back to kind of the point we made a couple times in the last couple shows, that let's say the Royals sign, whether it's Gallardo or Kennedy, opening day 2016, if you look at the roster, you could make the argument that it is better than the opening day roster on 2015, when the Royals started 7-0, 15-7, and were basically wire-to-wire the best team, and they were the best team up until the trade deadline. In the American League. So, you know, we got to still remember that, like, as well as Cueto pitched in the playoffs, you know, minus the one game in Toronto, he was really quite sensational. And then as big as important of a player as Ben Zobrist was, and he was very important, you know, the Royals, before they got those players, were still the best team in the American League and had an argument for the best team in baseball. So, putting into that context the 2016 roster, you'd have to look at it on opening day, assuming, you know, let's say best case scenario, they were to get Ian Kennedy. If you had a rotation of, you know, Volquez, Kennedy, Ventura, Medlin, and then either Duffy or possibly Zimmer or, you know, somebody in that fifth spot, I mean, I'd go to battle with that rotation, because, you know, there you're looking at, and I've always said, I would choose five number three pitchers over what the Dodgers had last year, you know, which was two number ones and then three other guys, more or less, you know. So that's kind of what the Royals will be rolling with. And when you've got a good defense, you've got an offense like they have that's capable of putting up runs in a hurry. It can go stagnant at times, but, you know, then you're in a good place. And the way the Royals play baseball, I think that'd be put them in a good situation. So got to remember that context of, even though it kind of, it sucks to lose the Zobrists and the Cuetos of the world, when you look back at what the Royals were able to accomplish without those guys, and you think now everybody, you know, sometimes being a year older obviously isn't exactly a good thing when you're starting to get close to that age 30, you know, your Lorenzo Cain's, your Alex Gordon, who is 30, you know, those times it's not necessarily the best. But then when you're entering your prime, like the Perez's and the Hosmers and the Moustakas's of the world, you know, it is a little bit better. So it's always important to keep that context and that perspective and remember that, you know, whoever these guys sign, it's going to make the pitching staff better, and they're probably going to be on paper better opening day 2016 than they were opening day 2015.
I think that'd be possible. And the other thing that I've thought about a number of times this offseason is, you know, which of these guys on the Royals in their rotation can probably give you a quality start every time out. I mean, it's reasonable to think any of those guys could give you a quality start, which, you know, even if that's the upper limit of the quality start, the three runs over six innings, you've got a bullpen behind them that doesn't give up a lot of runs. So that makes something like a four run average per game a reasonable target to where you're going to win a lot of games. You know, you just have to have those guys who can keep your team in it and get you through six, and you hand it off to the bullpen. And the Royals are kind of built that way, and that's what worked in 2014. It's what worked last year. You know, they did go out and get Cueto as an ace. They see Ventura as maybe a potential guy like that. But it's like you said, they're a bunch of number three type of guys. There are a lot of average to slightly above average guys who can just go out, get the innings, and hand it off. And that's been a winning formula for a couple of years. And it's still kind of the blueprint. So that and depth of just pitching options. You know, last year they traded John Lamb. They traded Aaron Brooks. They traded Sean Manaea. They traded Brandon Finnegan. All guys who at least are going to be potential major league starters this year, all on different teams. You know, that's a lot of depth to trade off. And so the Royals didn't end up, you know, they're not starting this year with a lot of guys who have a lot of experience in the major leagues. They signed, you know, Chien-Ming Wong last week. They've got Christian Benford in the minors. They've got John Lannon and Dylan G as two minor league signings, guys with some experience. They signed David Huff, who was one of those guys pitching with Kershaw last year. 31-year-old kind of journeyman guy. You know, these are just kind of spot starter types of guys, but they had to replenish some of that stuff too. And so if you go with Ian Kennedy and that bumps Danny Duffy to the bullpen, well, your bullpen's better. You could always put Duffy back in the rotation if you needed to, and it just extends some of that starting pitching depth that they have in the big leagues and in AAA, so that if you do have injuries, you need to skip a start, whatever, you've got things backed up. And so I think it's certain that they're going to get another pitcher, most likely Gallardo or Kennedy, but could be some other guys. But I think those two are your top targets, the most likely targets. But if they get signed off, there's still some names.
Yeah. And, you know, you get the feeling that Kyle Zimmer, he's had really tough road to try and get to the majors. He was supposed to be a fast mover because he was a college arm, and he had a very pitchable arm, or whatever, as they kind of say, where you can, you know, very athletic ability to hopefully kind of stay out of injury trouble. That didn't happen. He's had a lot of injuries, but he's a guy that when you look at, you know, if something doesn't work out with the five that we mentioned, you kind of get the feeling the Royals are really thinking this is the year. You know, he was injured again last year, but it was at the beginning of the year, and he finished out the season and did quite well, statistically speaking. So, you know, that's another guy, that's another option. So when you've got the Royals, I think, are in a pretty good situation pitching wise, I would think. I don't think you could say at any point that Vargas will be back. He'll start rehab probably near closer to the end of the season, but I don't think there's much of a hope that he would be able to come back at any point.
I think August is at the earliest, and then it's like,
yeah,
you know, how effective is he going to be if it's in the middle of a pennant race? I don't know if
you don't want to take that chance.
Yeah.
So, I think the Kyle Zimmer is kind of that wild card there, because what you want to have, and this is the toughest part about baseball and being a general manager, because the Royals want Kyle Zimmer. They would love to have him be in the rotation opening day. That's not going to happen. That's fine. But now you have to say, okay, do we plan on Kyle Zimmer taking that step? He looked good second half of last season. Do we plan on him taking that step and being in the rotation, or can we take the approach that we can't plan on anything, especially with pitchers, and so we have to go sign somebody? You know, I mean, the best position to be in is signing Ian Kennedy, having, you know, Kennedy, Volquez, Ventura, every et al, if you will, having all of them be doing well, and then Kyle Zimmer's knocking on the door and just blowing away everyone in AAA, and then you've got a tough decision to make, right? So that's, you know, that's one of them good problems,
right? Exactly.
As as they would say on the wire. So it's signing a pitcher, whether it's Kennedy or whether it's Gallardo, makes a lot of sense from that standpoint of giving the Royals options, which is very important, especially when they're going to be going down the stretch, and then you're going to have those five guys, you know, assuming an additional pitcher is signed, and then hopefully Zimmer ready to go by mid-season, and then you've got Chris Young, who you can plug in, whether there's injuries, spot starts, somebody's not being effective. So there's the being able to mix and match, and then with having the bullpen that they have, and, you know, if Duffy is not being effective as a starter, we know he can be effective in the bullpen. So that's a good place for him to be if he's not being effective, and then Chris Young comes in, or maybe Kyle Zimmer comes up, or whoever. So, you know, the best thing they can do is give themselves options.
Yeah. I sure don't think they want to expect or rely on Zimmer.
No,
that
wouldn't be a smart thing to do.
That'd be pretty foolish. And I think he'll be fine, but it's just kind of one of those things. You got to see what happens this year and how he goes. Good chance. I mean, it sure sounds like they're interested in getting him into the rotation somewhere in the middle of the year or something, but it's all up to him and his health and how well he's pitching. So I think we'll
see
when he gets here and just see what happens.
And, We had originally budgeted some time to talk about Wei-Yin Chin here as both Mike and I's number one target, but as we mentioned, he is unfortunately no longer available. So we're going to go ahead and go to break then, but when we come back, Mike mentioned a top from the kind of these more realistic guys of Kennedy and Gallardo, some maybe flyers that the Royals could take on some guys in different situations, whether it's older veterans or people coming off injuries or ineffectiveness or whatever. So when we come back from the break, if you stick with us, we're going to dive into that a little bit and see if maybe there's another one of those diamonds in the rough that the Royals could pick up. So stick with us, and we'll see you on the other side.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
Nice running catch by the right fielder. There's a first major league hit by Alex Gordon. Kind of fist through the left side of the infield.
The Vault.
Hey, Troy, what are you doing this weekend?
Going to grab a beer somewhere. What do you have in mind?
I heard about this awesome new bar downtown. It's called Rage. the waitresses have a contest to see who has the most piercing.
Oh, man, that's not really my scene.
Well, there's another bar close by called Spit Cup. Check it out. The bartenders wear chaps, and every hour they shoot a guy.
No, seriously, I just want a bar where I can sit down and watch the game.
Okay, I've got just the place. It's called Lilac. You sit on pillows, and you drink from eucalyptus leaves.
No, Ned, but I just want a place where I can get a cheap drink and watch the football game.
Okay, I got it. This place, it's got a TV. It's called 816.
Limitosis.
Yep. All their drinks come in NBA hats.
Man, I just want a place like Kelly's.
Oh, you mean Kelly's Westport Inn? No, they've got all the basketball and bowl game. They've even got a heated roof. The view is really nice, too, if you know what I'm saying. Why didn't you just say you wanted to go to Kelly's?
Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road. Make it your place to go any time of the week.
There's a star man waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a star man waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it, 'cause he knows it's all worthwhile. He told me, let the children lose it. Let the children use it. Let all the children boogie.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Folks, from the right before the break, I told you, Mike mentioned at the top of the show, list of pitchers. We talked about the big ones that we think are probably the most realistic in any in Kennedy and Giovanni Gallardo, but there were a lot of kind of wild card pitchers, if you will. Some guys that, whatever the case may be, you know, whether it's age in the case of someone like a Mark Burley, or whether it's past ineffectiveness and injury like a Tim Lincecum or Cliff Lee with an injury, then there's something that's preventing you from saying, man, that's a guy. I mean, Lincecum's got two Cy Youngs, but he hasn't been effective for 3 or 4 years now. So those kind of guys, you have to kind of really look. Kind of dig a little deeper in to see if you can find something. So from those lists of the ones that you mentioned, Mike, give me the one that from your perspective is going to be best, who would be the best fit for the Royals at this point?
Well, I think the guy they're most likely to go for is Pfister. I seem to recall some yeah, right. some
that was for fake Ned.
Right. God, that goes back to like 2011.
That goes back to when we had Brooks Pounders on the show.
Yeah,
man, back in the day, Pfister Pounders.
Pfister Pounders. I remember people emailed complaining about that too.
Did they really?
Yeah, they're like, "Why do you have to have such immature humor?" I'm like, "Well, it's canceled.
That's fantastic. It's fake Ned. Yeah, but he's immature.
That's what
he doesn't have to have it. It's just what he is.
That's the gimmick. Someone's got to make us look good.
That's true."
The problem with Pfister is just that his velocity's fallen off. He's had a lot of really good seasons. With the Mariners, he was always kind of decent. The Tigers, he had some good years, and then it just kind of he's always had good control, but the velocity's fallen off. He had some forearm problems last year. Ended up on the Nationals after a weird trade with the Tigers. And ended the year in their bullpen. He only made 15 starts last year. He only made 25 the year before that. So there's definite injury concern. But if it's something where, it wasn't a Tommy John, so there's no rehab, there's no like complications or anything, it's just a matter of can he get some of that back? And if the Royals think that he can get some of that back, that could be a really cheap option. I don't think it'd go so far as like a minor league signing, but I think some projections had him as like maybe a 1 year, $8 to $10 million contract to try to rebuild some value. And if the Royals could get in on that and they saw something, that would be pretty impressive. And I think that's kind of what they're thinking with Pfister. It's just a part of it's a hunch. There's nothing that really stands out except for he does have really good control, walks less than 2 per 9 innings, those kind of things. Pretty good ground ball profile, doesn't give up a lot of home runs. So I think that's the guy that they're probably thinking of. But, you know, some other guys out there are a little bit better. Matt Latos, you know, he's only 28. He had a number of injuries over the last couple of years. But, you know, as recently as 2010, 2011, 2012, he was a pretty, you know, pretty big name. He was an up-and-coming young pitcher. You know, he's only 28 right now. He just turned 28 back in December. So, you know, he's got a lot of youth to him, a lot of time to turn things around. You know, good strikeouts, pretty good control, you know, pretty decent on the home run rates and things like that. So I could see that being a good potential fit for the Royals. There are some questions of clubhouse antics, maturity, things like that.
Just there are a couple.
The Royals usually will shy away from some of that stuff because they do have such a strong clubhouse and a group. But at the same time, maybe that same clubhouse being on a winning team. I mean, Latos was on the Reds. He was on the Marlins. You know, he was, I think he had a couple games with the Dodgers. I mean, it's just like he's bounced around in the last couple of years. And it seemed like maybe putting him in a winning situation, maybe that would help. And that's something that the Royals would include as part of their scouting. You know, is he going to adjust to that situation better? You know, so I think there's definite, he's probably got the most upside or, you know, maybe the second most upside of any of the guys that we've kind of brought up among, maybe even including Kennedy and Gallardo. So, I mean, that's another one. I mean, I don't know. I think those are the two most likely guys that the Royals might sign on like a 1-year deal. But, you know, over the break, you brought up Tim Lincecum as really intriguing. And anytime you've got a 2-time Cy Young Award winner potentially in the mix, I mean, obviously that would be interesting. You know, highly touted through a lot of innings right out of the gate. You know, 2 Cy Young Awards, has a couple of no-hitters under his belt.
I mean, he looked like he was going to be the Clayton Kershaw, or what Clayton Kershaw ended up being, is what you thought Lincecum was going to be. And then, I mean, right, literally, overnight.
Overall pick in 2006, that's the Luke Hochaver draft. So that was one of those things that for years people lamented that, okay, you know, why couldn't we have drafted Lincecum instead of Hochaver? And now maybe you would have the potential to have either of them.
And both of them could be in the bullpen.
Could be, yeah. It's just... But, you know, another guy where the velocity's really dropped, you know, he
literally just fell off a cliff. I mean,
yeah. And
2011, he had a 2.74 ERA, and then he hasn't had an ERA under 4.1 since.
Right. And it's just, you know, how much of that is that he's 5'11", he was always thought to be undersized, even, you know, coming into the draft, a lot of teams didn't want him because they thought he was an injury risk. His training, preparation, his routine, his motion, it's all unorthodox. You know, he's a big long toss guy. He's a big, you know, alternative, you know, he's not an old school pitching guy. You know, he's not 120 feet and push off the rubber and tall and fall. He's not that guy. You know, he's one of the first guys who's really come up in some of those advanced training techniques like Trevor Bauer and Kershaw and some of the Jaeger guys and the driveline guys. So, you know, maybe that was something where I don't think maybe his mechanics hurt him, but maybe he just got hurt. You know, something went off. His velocity dipped. When that happened, he became much more hittable. And, you know, the results end up being a lot worse than they had been earlier in his career. But like you brought up before, if Dave Island can figure something out, well, Lidscombe's got the most upside of any of these guys. You know, that's a potential Cy Young guy. I don't know if he'd ever even come close to that, but if he could be 180 innings at, you know, 80% of what Lincecum was in his best year, that's pretty good. You know, 3.4 ERA, you would live with that for 30 starts.
Yeah, and, you know, he's a good candidate for one of those guys that could possibly, you know, reinvent themselves. And, you know, his early on, you know, you talk about his velocity dip in 2000, I think it was 2009, 2010 that he won those back-to-back Cy Youngs, you know, but going back to 2008, his average fastball velocity was 94.1 miles per hour. And now as of 2015, it was 87.2. So that's a stark.
That's a big drop.
You know, you're looking at, and it almost works out this way to about 1 mile per hour per year that he's dropped since 2008. Mm-hmm. So, like you said, that's very concerning. But
his fastball usage is going down in all.
Yes, that's exactly just what I was going
to
mention.
Yeah, and so he's not able to play off that fastball, so he's got to do different things. And those different things, his slider and everything, they're not as effective because the fastball is not, you know, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. So
I hope I didn't steal your point.
No, it was just going to, but I was going to say possibly the hidden point in that is he could be trying. And then, because if you look at, say, 2014, his fastball usage was about 46%. That's compared to in 2008, where it was 66%. So, you know, quite a big difference. Yeah, 20% difference from 2008 to 2014. Now, in 2014, his slider was used 21.7% of the time, curveball 7.7%, and changeup 23.9%, right? So a decent mix of pitches there. And then you look at 2015, fastball usage 48%, about the same. Slider percentage, though, down to 14.7%. From 21.7, curveball up to 12.6 from 7.7, changeup stayed about the same. So, you know, what that could say is he's trying to experiment. He's trying to find a way to mix up his pitches and work off a slower fastball better so that it can still be more effective, even though it's not the velocity that it once was. Again, that's just supposition on my part about what's possibly happening. But, you know, it does lead you to think there could be something additional going on there. And that is something where, again, you have to kind of trust in Dave Island and say, hey, you know, when you look at Tim Lincecum, do you see something that we can work with? Do you see so? And basically, I think you have to kind of go with every, like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, you have to kind of look at that and go with all those pitchers. Say, okay, you know, here's who we would, you know, if you're Dayton Moore, I would say, here's who I would think I think I want. Here's why. Tell me what you think you can do with each one of these pitchers. You know, which ones you think we'd have the most success here in Kansas City. That's going to be the most important part. But, you know, if you're Dayton Moore and you go to Dave Island and say that, and he says, you know, I see this in Tim Lincecum that I think we can really work with, and I think he can be effective here. Then, I mean, if you're Dave Island, that's got to make you, or I'm sorry, if you're Dayton Moore, that's got to make you really excited. Cause you think, man, we got this two-time Cy Young winner and we can probably get him at an affordable price. And Dave Island says he can work with him. And Dave Island's track record has been very, very good. So, you know, that'll be really interesting. One of the ones that we haven't kind of talked about, and you said you didn't really put him too high on your list, is Mark Burley. And you said you didn't put him that high because your thought was that he just might retire and walk away, because it seems like every year for the last few it's been like, oh, Mark Burley's done, you know, and he comes right back and he's still effective. So Burley intrigues me probably because I'm biased, and more from a biased against Mark Burley perspective, because the dude has literally made an entire career out of destroying the Kansas City Royals. So it seems like every time you see Mark Burley, he's doing something really good, and it's always against the Royals, for at least the first large part of his career. So, you know, plus you've got some things where the Royals seem to like guys they're familiar with. They'd be very familiar with him after being in the division
about
for so long.
Yeah. 1,200 innings of Mark Burley.
Yes.
Just against them.
And if you're Mark Burley, you got to think, okay, you know, I'm familiar with the Central. I'm familiar with all the cities and a lot of the teams and, you know, being in the American League Central grind, if you will. So there's some things to like about that. And again, it comes back to the Dave Island thing. Does he think there's something that Burley can work with? Is there, you know, is Burley's skill set going to work in Kauffman with the defense? And, Kauffman Stadium plus Royals defense is usually an equation that ends in, yes, a Royals pitcher's skill set is going to work, no matter what that happens to be.
Generally, unless time really takes a lap on you like Guthrie.
Yeah.
Or it just, you just ran out.
Yeah. And, you know, so that's what Burley's kind of, that's the one that sticks out as really intriguing to me, because he's going to be a 1-2 year deal max. And I mean, he's 37. So, I mean, he's up there. And that's a legitimate concern. But, you know, all the same, it's something where you can say, okay, you know, you could catch some lightning in a bottle there for a year, maybe two. And I don't know. So those two names, Lincecum and Burley, might be the most intriguing for me. But that's kind of the lottery ticket philosophy, though.
A little bit. And especially with, like, I think with Burley, you don't have as much upside, but it's probably a pretty good floor. You can reasonably expect he can probably get you. I mean, he's had, up until last year, he'd had 14 straight seasons of 200 innings or more, 14 straight seasons of 30 starts or more, actually 15 in a row. He just didn't reach the innings last year. So that's every single year except his rookie year, where he only pitched in 28 games and only 3 starts. So, I mean, he's been that guy. Good health. He's never thrown very hard, but he's never walked that many guys. He works quickly. He's got one of the best pickoff moves. He's a great fielder. Maybe he's not a great fielder now because he's 37 and 30s are not good. But right. You know, last year, he was only 4 outs away from reaching 200 innings again. And the Blue Jays started him on like 1 day rest just to get him there. So he got hammered a little bit in that last start. But, you know, I think he could probably do that again. I mean, if he gives you an average ERA over 200 innings, there is a lot of value in that. And because those are innings you don't have to cover with other guys, and you keep your bullpen fresh, great veteran presence, things like that. So, I mean, I could see it. It's just a matter of if he does want to play or not. There hasn't really been a whole lot on him either way, of he's very strongly considering retiring or he's very strongly considering playing. He's probably in that spot where if he gets the right interest from the right team, he would probably go for it. And if nothing materializes, you know, he'd maybe sit the season out, maybe come in mid-season, or who knows, you know, may retire or wait till next year. Who knows? Not sure what Burley's doing, but I'm leaning that he would probably not play this year. Again, that's kind of a hunch too. It just kind of seems the way things ended that, I don't think he's necessarily done, but he may just float around for a bit. But he'd be interesting. Yeah. I really wanted to sign him back in 2012 when he went to the Marlins. I thought he was a great fit for that Royals team at that time. And, you know, I still do. He would have been a great fit for that team. But, you know, we got a lot of money to go to Miami. So that's tough to fight off and compete against when you're the Royals in 2012. So,
And he's a guy that, like you talked about, just consistency. I mean, you know, you mentioned last year he was only 4 outs away, and that's literally, I mean, that's the first of his career as a full season that he hasn't gotten 200 innings. And I mean,
which doesn't happen anymore. I mean, no injuries or anything. It's crazy.
And I mean, he had a stretch from, you know, 2002 to 2005 where he had no less than 230 innings. I mean, that's insane this day and age, you know. And and he's only in 16 years, only twice in his career has he had an ERA plus below 100, you know, which is league average. And 1 year they were 95, and 1 year it was 99. So even last year, as a 36-year-old, he had an ERA plus of 104, 3.8 ERA. I mean, he was still effective. So it's one of those things where you say, okay, Mark, sign you up, come to Kansas City, you know, help us try and win another World Series. And you do a thing where, you know, maybe every third start, maybe every fifth start, whatever, you throw Chris Young in there instead of Mark Burley. And if you say to him, you know, we'd love for you to get 200 innings, but more than that, we want 200 innings from this spot in the rotation. So if you give us 160 and Chris Young gives us 50 from his starts, then that accomplishes the goal. And, you know, then you're getting a lot of value out of Chris Young, and Chris Young stays fresh late into the season. And then, you know, Mark Burley, he even as his age gets up, you're reducing some of that wear and tear from within a season. So I just spitballing here.
That could work,
but you know, it's thinking outside the box for stuff like that, that can possibly, you know, net you a little bit extra around the margins for a team like the Royals. Now
they did a lot of that last year too, with Medlin coming back and Blanton here and there, and you mixing and matching a little bit, and saving Chris Young for the final stretch, and then getting him in the playoffs and things like that. So I mean, it's not like something they haven't tried before.
Yeah, and you know, the caveat to that obviously is that, well, if we're going to pay Burley 10, 12, whatever million a year, you know, why would we pay him that to not start every fifth start or whatever the case may be? So
yeah, I don't know if it takes that much, but just the hypothetical of the whole thing is, if you're going to pay him anything more than, you know, $8 million a year, you would expect something beyond just 20 starts.
Yeah.
Especially with his track record.
Yeah. So, you know, those are kind of the names out there. I mean, the rest, if you dig much deeper beyond the list, you know, prepare yourself.
Yeah.
The other, because I mean,
we didn't really talk much about Cliff Lee. He's still considering. True. It's another one of those where it's like, if it's the right fit, and I think the Royals would be a perfect fit, but you know, he missed all of 2015. He had, you know, tore a flexor tendon, didn't get surgery on it, just rehabbed it, which sometimes that is okay. And sometimes, you know, you really needed to get the surgery. He's 37, pitched only 81.1 innings in 2014. So he's a long way from that kind of workhorse spot that he used to be at. If he could come in and still be in that same kind of mode, you know, decent strikeouts and low walks, then yeah, I think the Royals would definitely love to have him. Another guy who might have some upside, you know, compared to everybody else. But I would bet he's done. I mean, Burley, if it's between Burley or Lee, I'm going to guess Burley's more likely to play than Cliff Lee. That would be pretty cool to get Cliff Lee. I just don't see it happening. But he's a name that I put down because, well, you know, like you said, you're kind of getting to the end of the rope here. Some other guys, Kyle Loesch, the Royals have been interested in him before. You know, he ended up last year pitching out of the bullpen. He's kind of running into that wall. He's also another guy in his upper 30s. Justin Masterson has had an injury about every year the last couple of years. Not that great when he is healthy. Mike Minor is kind of interesting because he's still young, but he's had Tommy John surgery. I think he's out this year, actually. Or no, he had shoulder surgery. I think he's out this year, but he would still have some team control under arbitration. So that might not be something that you look at this year, but that might be something down the line that he may become, you know, a reasonable name to follow. But certainly nobody that the Royals would pay attention to this year, because he's basically not going to do anything this year.
Yeah. So, you know, there's some options out there for the Royals. And I think within the smattering of names that we mentioned, there are some, I think there's a wide range of price points that the Royals can consider. Because you go of the ones we talked about,
Command like a multi-year deal. Like it's probably Gallardo and Kennedy are the only multi-year guys.
Yeah.
Latos had, you know, bone spurs a couple of years ago. He had some knee problems. You know, I don't know that you want to, and he might not want to sign, you know, a 2 or 3 year deal just because he's 28. You know, he doesn't want to put himself in a situation where he's, does regain that form and he's pitching as a 30-year-old and only making $4 million a year because he signed an iffy contract a couple years ago. I think he and Pfister are probably looking at like 1 year, rebuild that value, hit the market again. The free agent class next year is not that strong. You know, they could maybe make some more money if they have a good rebound year. So, and that might be the case with like Lindskum as well. So, I mean, that might be the spot where you go, where you're value shopping, where it's the Royals with their short-term contract approach for most of their guys that they've picked up, because like we've talked about, the window is probably the next 2 years. You know, the Royals don't necessarily want to be shelling out long-term contracts to a lot of guys anyway. And if you can get Doug Pfister for 1 year and $8 million, you might as well take a shot at it. But I'm, you know, guys like Burley and Lee and Lindskum, I don't know what kind of like actual money would work out with those guys. That's kind of tricky to figure out. I've seen like hardly any projections or predictions or anything for those guys. So it's, I guess it's guessing. I guess to put it mildly, I just don't know what they would make. It's, I think it'd be cool to get them for like $1 million in incentives. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
We do that.
Yeah.
Start a petition.
Yeah. It's that, but you know, there's some room to work there. And if the Royals are really, you know, they structured Alex Gordon's deal to actually give him a pay cut this year. And no doubt he agreed to that with the idea that the Royals are going to be looking to make another move, you know? So hopefully they can sign one of those guys. Hopefully it's the best one of the bunch, whoever that may turn out to be. Hopefully that's the guy the Royals get. And I guess we'll kind of wait and see. But I do think there's going to be a move. I think from – there's somebody in that list that I think the Royals are going to get, I got to think. I
mean, at least one, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an attractive spot to go to, especially if you're one of those guys looking to rebuild your value. I mean, look at Chris Young. Chris Young's a perfect example of that. He – completely rebuilt his value and just happened to want to stay. But I mean, he's making some good money for his age and for his skill set, because he gets to stay in a spot that's beneficial to him. And he showed that it was going to be beneficial to him. So that's kind of the same spot that all of these guys are in.
Yeah. And I think, lost my train of thought. So I guess I don't think anything, but the, you know, there's, I'm really, I don't know what to say. So if you go into that, I mean, if they didn't sign anybody, I'd still feel pretty good about the Royals team. As it's constructed today, I still feel pretty good about the team, you know? So
yeah,
I still think you would have to, yeah. And based on where everyone else in the division is and the moves they've made, I still think you would have to say the Royals are the favorite at this point. And if they went and signed a pitcher like an Ian Kennedy, I think that would, you know, make them the prohibitive favorite for the Central, and maybe kind of put them closer to the edge in the American League, because as being the favorite in the American League, I mean, because you look at the landscape and, you know, the teams of last year, you know, Toronto lost David Price, who was a big part of their kind of second half surge. And, you got, you know, no one else in the, I mean, the West was kind of a mess last year. You know, it looked like the Angels were going to take it, and then they faltered, and the Rangers started off really slow, and then they came on near the end. And, you know, they made a trade at the deadline for Yovani Gallardo, and he may not be back there next year. So you've got, you know, the landscape is kind of wide open in the American League for the Royals to kind of step in and take it for a third year in a row. And so if you can seize that moment and do it by just something as simple as signing an Ian Kennedy, then that's a move the Royals got to make. You got to do it, Mike.
I think so. And I think they'll probably get something pretty soon. I mean, spring training's, the report dates in like what, 30 days or something like that. So, I mean, you're coming up pretty close on it. It's kind of flown by as an off season, and I think a lot of that is because we've been following Gordon. for, you know, most of it, and that went a little longer than it seemed like it needed to. But, you know, now you're kind of getting these lower markets, and there were like four signings today. So I think things are picking up. The market's kind of formulated itself. And when you're looking at like Wei Yin Chen, who he signed for what, 5 years and $80 million. It's backloaded. It's a decent contract. I think the agents, the teams, they know that that was the best guy left. And so that's going to trickle down to the Kennedys, the Gallardos, in what deals they're going to make. You know, they're not going to get a 5-year deal. They're not probably going to get a 4-year deal. And they're certainly not going to get $80 million over 5 years, or, you know, what is that, $16 million a year? They're not going to get that. So I think that bodes well for the Royals, who, you know, with Gordon's restructuring, they can afford something like that. And it would probably be another contract that was backloaded for a couple of years to try to, you know, keep payroll under a certain level and, you know, leave some wiggle room to make some acquisitions later on. So, you know, I think, you know, maybe that means Ian Kennedy makes $10 million this year and $16 million in 2018. Who knows? But they'll have to get him first. And then we'll see what the numbers shake out to. But I think he's probably the favorite for most fans. And if I really had to guess, I think they probably would want to have some of that stability over the next couple of years. But I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, if you're the Royals, you want to be locked and loaded for 2017 or 2016 and 2017, I think is what their goal would be, to the point where they know who they're going to be and they can just kind of mix and match the Jerod Dysons and the Terrence Gores of the world to get that slight edge whenever they need it, you know. But you know, you want to be set for when, you know, hopefully Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer build on the years they had last year. And if Alex Gordon and Lorenzo Cain can continue on the pace for the next couple of years, I mean, if you can set that rotation, now you got to worry about, you know, Volquez, this is the last year of his contract, but, you know, hopefully, because a lot of this hinges too. I mean, if Yordano Ventura becomes the dominant force that his talent would lead you to believe that he could, then a lot of this matters even less, because you don't need Volquez to be, you know, superstar. You don't need, you know, you still want the Ian Kennedy there, but you wouldn't need him to be as, you know, you're not leaning on him as heavily if Yordano Ventura becomes a true ace like everyone thinks he can, you know. And if Danny Duffy can finally put it all together and prove he can be a consistent starter, same deal. You know, these things, you know, all can smooth out the pressure on all of them. So, and then if Kyle Zimmer were to come up and have some success, you know, and Chris Medlin were able to rekindle some of his pre Tommy John success as well, you know, then you're looking at, man, I mean,
but it gets pretty strong.
Yeah. The Royals rotation has an upside of being really, really strong next year, especially if they were to sign an Ian Kennedy. You know, if he could put it all together, Volquez did what he does last year, Medlin shakes off that Tommy John rust and becomes the guy that he was pre-surgery, Ventura takes that step. I mean, you're looking at a very, very good rotation. And couple that with the defense and players, like I said, like Moose and Haas hitting their prime, and Gordon and Kane already in their prime. And, you know, man, that's Royals would be even tougher next year than they were this year. So,
and they'd still have the bullpen.
Yes, they'd still have the dom, which again could be better than it was last year.
Wait, that's so really hard to think, but it could be.
I mean, you don't anticipate much of a fall off from a Wade Davis, and because everyone talks about the volatility of bullpen, but a lot of that comes from the fact that bullpen pitchers rely on kind of overthrowing, if you will, from a fastball standpoint. And you know, historically speaking, I think a lot of that has kind of happened. But Wade Davis he's not that guy. And same with Luke Hochhaver. So you don't imagine much fallout from him. Kelvin Herrera is a concern, you know, but same deal with Joaquin Soria.
Even Herrera has added that extra breaking ball. So he's not just
that fastball changeup. That he showed at the end of last year and in the playoffs. I mean, that thing was dirty.
Yeah, and it's, you know, you've got guys like Davis who's got power curve, 95 fastball, cutter. You got Hochever with a cutter, a good curveball, and a fastball. You know, you've got four guys there who have like three pitches, where a lot of guys have one. It's like, that's tough. So I think the Herrera concern is legit, though, because, I mean, he throws 100.
Yeah.
That's.
But, I mean, he's still. He's still
continually without getting hurt somewhere.
Right. And he's still young. I mean, what's he, 27-ish?
27, 28. I don't know off the top of my head. I should, but I don't.
Yeah, I feel like I should know that. But so, I mean, he's one of those guys that, you know, if he's the only one you have to worry about, and you think he would still be able to keep it together, you know, for the season. But, you know, the rest of those guys, you know, that's why Soria has been able to be successful for his career, because he hasn't been that kind of overpowering guy.
Never been a hard thrower at all.
No. So, you know, the bullpen could even be better, which is hard to believe, but it's a certain possibility.
That'd be funny.
Yeah. And Greg Holland will still be hurt.
Right.
So, but man, if all those things happen, again, big if, but
right.
The Royals have been coming through on a lot of their ifs lately. So
I've learned to not count them out in pretty much anything.
So, I mean, if Dave Island can work with these, I mean, Yordano Ventura, a lot of it hinges on him. He's kind of the biggest mystery that nobody knows what's going to happen. You know, because his pitching in the playoffs wasn't all that stellar. No. He had some good moments, but he also had some bad. So oh, wow. Kelvin Herrera is only 25.
Really?
That can't be right.
Hmm.
That's what, as of 2015, that's what his age says in Baseball Reference. Man, I thought he was older than that.
Wow.
So he came up when he was 21 in 2011. Did not realize that. Didn't realize he was that young. I thought he was like 23 when he came up.
Jeez. Been pitching at a high level for a long time.
But he was born December 31st, 1989, so he won't even be 27 until – he just turned 26, so he won't be 27 until next season. Wow.
Well, there we go.
Good for him. All right. So he's entering his prime as a pitcher right there, so you'd think he would be able to keep it for another season or two easily. so there you go. That answers that question. It's really that Yordano Ventura, I mean – biggest wild card, because if he's like he was last year, you know, the world's proved that they can still succeed. But if he takes that next step, then that's going to be something dirty.
Yeah, if it can be 2014 Ventura, that would be very ideal. But a lot of things with Ventura, his, you know, hit rate, you know, his whip was the same, his FIP and all that. I mean, it was all pretty much the same. The, you know, a lot of the difference was just
almost like freakily so.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same. It's just he got a lot of the runs that the guys that he put on ended up scoring, whereas in 2014 they didn't. But his walk rate went down, his strikeout rate went up. I mean, normally you're going to see improvement. But I think the ERA combined with some of the inconsistencies, that's probably where a lot of it comes from, is where, you know, it looks like he had this really, really weird season, and he did.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way to categorize the first 2 months of it. It was just strange.
He still had 102 ERA plus, you know, so better than league average. But It just seemed like every big moment that the Royals needed – when, you know, for every big moment that Lorenzo Cain came through last year for the Royals, it seemed like every big moment where they needed Yordano Ventura to step up, he kind of faltered a little bit.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, just really kind of unfortunate, because like you said, when you do a deep dive into his stats, it's a little bit different than, you know, what we saw with our eyes. But you saw a pitcher who just wasn't completely there. I don't mean just, you know, mentally. I'm not trying to say anything about his mental state, but just, you know, he wasn't putting all the pieces together to be the successful pitcher that he needed to be consistently, which that's going to be the big thing for this coming season.
Yeah. He was just kind of iffy. His yeah. best game was really that one against Toronto in game six. And he pitched very well in that game, but yeah, that was the best one, and it was still only like 5.1. It wasn't like utterly dominant. It wasn't like going out there and mowing down 12 guys.
It wasn't a Johnny Cueto game five of the ALDS right. type of performance.
Right. It wasn't something like that. So, you know, maybe he'll get there and put some more mileage on that arm and, you know, figure some stuff out. Probably be able to deal with the pressure a little bit better.
Yeah, but to your point of how close the stats are, this is just kind of weird, but his FIP in 2014 was 3.60, and his FIP in 2015 was 3.57. And his WHIP in 2014 was 1.295, and his WHIP in 2015 was 1.298. So his FIP was only off by 0.03, and his WHIP was only off by 0.003, but an ERA of 3.2 in 2014 and 4.08 in 2015. So the better part of an entire run difference in ERA, but
it's really weird.
The deeper metrics, you know, his hits per nine, he gave up 8.3. in 2014, 8.5 in 2015, home runs per nine, 0.7 in 2014, 0.8 in 2015. You know, his, like you said, his walks went down, his strikeouts went up almost an entire strikeout per nine innings. So yeah, really kind of weird, but just, you know, that's the kind of guy we talk about when we say regression in a good way, you know, regressing more towards, you know, what his numbers should have been. So from an ERA standpoint, because if you just took away his ERA and you looked at everything else, you'd be like, man, he probably had a pretty decent season. But and he's, it was still decent, but it was just kind of, like you said, just kind of weird.
Yeah, just cramps and fights and all kinds of other
just
stuff.
Weird reactions. And yeah, just kind of the cramp thing was the weirdest, man. Twice in a row,
two games in a row.
I still remember the scene of him just like throwing his glove and like holding his hand like it was a scene from Total Recall or something. Like it was like it had come to life, and it was just like in a weird like claw position, and it's like, man, what just happened? And it was just a simple cramp.
Yeah, on opening day, because I was following the foul ball, and I come back and Ventura's on the ground. I'm like, what the hell happened?
It's like, man, eat some bananas or something, dude.
Yep.
But hopefully he takes he
hopefully eats he figures banana. That out. He changed his hair color too this offseason, so who knows?
That's important, you know. You got to right that ready to go.
I'm sure somebody's gonna harp on that if he starts out slow. Well, maybe
he's
pitching instead of
worrying about his hair color.
Shut up.
What a joke this guy is. He's
back in Monday, we didn't do our hair colors. We just went out and pitched through 90, 95 every day on the phone. Shut up.
Yeah.
Just get off.
Tura's got more talent in his pinky finger than you got anywhere. But, and then because Ventura signed through 2019, just like Gordon is and Perez is. So, you
know, he's
there's going to be that. Yes, because there's going to be that mass exodus in 2017, we all know. But if the players that the Royals are grooming, your Kyle Zimmer, your Bubba Starlings, Raul Mondesi's the world, can come up and kind of transition during that period, and you've still got a dominant pitcher, hopefully one of the best catchers in baseball, and a very good outfielder that you can build off of, and then with Starling and Mondesi hopefully keeping that up the middle defense strong, I mean, you know, you can the window doesn't have to close in 2017, you know, and you've still got, they've got draft picks from the last couple of years, and they've got a couple draft picks, you know, in between now and then that they could make that, you know, could have some impact in that 2019 season, so the 2018-2019 time frame. So it doesn't have to be just a two-year window from here on out.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can find us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/KansasCityBaseballVault. If you want to email your thoughts or comments, send those to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. And don't forget, you can also sign up and subscribe through iTunes, through Stitcher, or you can just go to royalspodcast.com or kansascitybaseballvault.com for any updates.